Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a special guest. Her name is Eleanor Sullivan. She has written A Singular Village Mystery, and it's called Cover Her Body. It's the first, and what I think is planned as a series. She's going to tell us herself right now. It's from Yesteryear Press. It's in your bookstores and online. I'm sure you can get it online. Hello.
Hello, David.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Tell me, first of all, where people can get this book. Because, I mean, I work at a bookstore and we don't have it, but I know that it's available in a lot of bookstores, isn't it?
If it isn't, any bookstore can order it.
Right.
But it's easy to get online. It's also a Kindle now and a Nook, as well as paperback from Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Right. So, but do you think it's available in all the, you said all the Barnes & Nobles. Okay. That's cool. I'm just glad people can get it in a lot of different places. I'm going to see if I can get it in our bookstore, too. I don't know who we would get it from, but I'm sure there's a distributor that would have it.
Well, Ingram's, I think, distributes it.
Oh, Ingram does? Oh, well, that's mm-hmm. one we deal with. I'll definitely get it from them. But I really like this book. I really like the beginning of this series. Now, tell me what Singular Village means. That catches my eye right away.
Well, back in 1898, some visitor to this little town in Ohio called Zor wrote a little piece in the newspaper, and he called Zor a singular village, and meaning it was special, it was different, there wasn't another one like it. And so that just seemed like the right title to title this series.
It's just it's an interesting way. You see a singular village. What does that mean? Right away, you're intrigued. You're thinking, mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. what does that mean? I have no idea what singular village means. I mean, you never see that on a mystery novel.
Well, I hope that means people will notice it.
I really know. I really like this book. I really like the characters, and I just want to know more about them. I mean, after I'm done reading Cover Body, all I can think of is I want to know more about these characters because I really like these characters, and some of them are nasty, but you know, I just want to know more about them.
Oh well, that's good to hear because I'm hard at work on the next book in the series.
Right. Oh, that's good. Now, Cover Her Body. Of course, that's a great title for a mystery. But you pronounce it Zor instead of Zoar. I know there's a Zoar in the Bible, I think.
There is. It's a play, and in the Bible it was pronounced Zoar. And it was a place where Lot found sanctuary when he escaped from, I guess it was Sodom. And so the separatists who escaped religious persecution in Germany, this is really true, found this sanctuary in Ohio, and they named it Zor because they had also found sanctuary.
Oh, I see. It's funny how your mind you look at these names and you think you have it said right in your mind, and you don't. And when you hear it said differently, like, wait a minute, is that the same name that I'm remembering from the book? So it's interesting because I grew up with the Bible, so I know a fair amount about the Bible. But these separatists are very biblical people, though, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And they rejected the state religion, which was Lutheran, at the time in Germany in 1817 when they left there. And because of that, they were horribly persecuted. They were thrown in prison. Their children were taken away and adopted out. They were whipped. They were forced to do hard labor. In fact, on occasion, people would come and drag them to church. So, but they just didn't believe in all the symbolism and the sacraments of the church, and they wanted to have a very personal relationship with whatever they believe.
Well, don't we all have a personal relationship with God at some point? A lot of us, anyway.
Well, yes, but they didn't think you needed any intercession with a priest or a pastor didn't even need the sacrament, that you and God could develop, you could establish your own salvation with God.
Hmm.
Of course, they also took many opportunities to point out each other's foibles so that they, you know, for their good.
Now, did you grow up around this kind of religion? I mean, is that why you know so much about it, or did you do research on it?
No, I didn't grow up around it at all because I didn't grow up in Ohio, but the leader of that town was my fourth great-grandfather. And I did grow up with my grandmother telling me about the town, taking me there, pointing out all the things, things they did differently. And so I've always been fascinated by it. I've gone there to visit a number of times. And then, of course, when I started writing this series, I spent some time there, and I worked with the historian, worked in their research library.
Wow.
So I feel like I know a lot about them now.
Right. Are any of those beliefs instilled in you at all that they have, or are you totally different from that?
I think I'm different from that.
That's what's intriguing about the book. Also, I wouldn't say make fun of it, but there are points in the book where they're talking about the hell part of it that you turn me off to that religion a little bit. I mean, to think that somebody would tell you you're going to hell right to your face, and that's such a horrible thing to tell somebody.
Well, of course, you want enough conflict and confrontation in any kind of fiction. And so I have no idea if anyone really said that, but I think it, as you read it, you'll see Adelaide question her beliefs, and I think that's probably closest to what I think I do a lot of questioning.
Yeah, Adelaide's a very strong character in this book, I can see. As I was reading, I think, but this author really likes this strong character, right, likes writing this strong woman character. But she's got she's definitely got her faults, and we see them as the book goes along, but it's interesting that she still has a strength underneath that to get through it.
She does, and that's really what I started with. It's just, I felt like I just knew her, even though, of course, she's a fictional character. But that strength in her is what I think carries her through and will carry her through the series.
Right. Now, and her relationship with her husband, which is a very strange relationship. I almost want to say strained. I mean, they still love each other, but there's definitely some issues that they need to work out.
They do, but I'm happy to say that that relationship warms up a lot in the next book.
Oh, it does. I think people... Well, I kind of enjoy the conflict because I sort of knew, you kind of know, but maybe you don't know, that they're not really going to separate, but they're just going to have their issues that they're not going to agree on. I mean, Adelaide is such a strong character. I mean, she's so strong-willed and so wants to do her own thing that nobody's going to tell her what to do.
That's right. And in fact, in that community back then, the women actually had a vote, which was, of course, totally untrue for any of the surrounding area in America. And they designed the community that equality for all. They became communal, and that was a practical decision. And they believed that every person was equal before God. And so she took that to heart. And acts on it. In fact, she's a stronger character than her husband, Benjamin, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I almost feel kind of sorry for Benjamin because of it, because he's got a handful. He's definitely got a handful.
Well, he does. And we'll see if he gets stronger as time goes on. Of course, then they might have more problems.
Now, are you a strong-willed woman, too?
Probably. You could ask my family.
I'll ask. We'll do that. We'll ask your family without you around. We don't want you coaching them at all.
Yeah, I think you'd get a few words.
Right. I mean, we all have our strong will. About us. And when you're determined to do something, you really want to do it. And you hate it when people try to talk you out of things. It's especially if you really are excited about doing it. Now, how long a process was it writing this book? I mean, has this been a long time writing this, or did you do a year or what? I mean, some authors do a year, some take longer.
Oh, no, this was much longer than that, because I also still write textbooks for Prentice Hall. I write nursing textbooks and books for nurses, and it seems like every time I get going on a mystery, they want another textbook. But
are you a nurse?
I am a nurse.
Oh, you are a full-fledged nurse.
I am.
RN.
RN.
Oh,
yes.
Wonderful! So all the technical stuff, all the dead bodies is right up your alley.
Well, yes. nurses don't see too many dead bodies.
No, that's how.
Yes.
They must see some, but I mean, I picture the scene right at the beginning of the book where she's finding the body. Adelaide. Is it Adelaide or Adelaide? Right.
Adelaide. Adelaide.
Adelaide, okay. Mm-hmm. Adelaide.
You know, you're probably right. It probably would be pronounced Adelaide, given the German, that it was German. But in my mind, she's Adelaide.
Well, we could have a discussion about how she should pronounce her name, first of all.
We could.
Now, what's her last name?
Beckman.
Beckman, okay.
Yeah, very attractive, but it had to be a German name, so.
But, you know, I've noticed that lately about books, that I read a book, and some names just seem too trumped up for me. They have to sound... To me, they have to sound like real names.
They do, and it distracts you from the story if you're reading names that are...
And also places, too. You have to be careful what you name a place, because if it sounds too stupid, it's not going to sound like a real place.
That's right. You don't want to take people, the reader, out of the story.
So I'm glad I'm not the only one thinking that. It sounds like you think that, too. But, I mean, that's very important. I mean, you'd think a place name would be unimportant compared to the plot and the characters and everything, but... I think that's sometimes as important, you know, that you really feel like this could be a real town.
Well, yes, and names, the way names sound sort of affect people, too. Like, one of the nasty characters in the book is Gerda. I mean, what an awful name.
Right.
Right away, you got to think, she can't be good.
Right, exactly.
So, and she isn't.
Is there anybody in Gerda that's good? I'm sure there are some people, but, you know...
Well, maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but that's how you try to get a name that might have some kind of connotation that just isn't real pleasant, or, on the other hand, is real pleasant.
Right, exactly. Now, I know, I met Brian Grueley. He writes a mystery series set in Starvation Lake in Michigan, and to my surprise, he actually told me there is a Starvation Lake, and it's a real place. I mean, I didn't know writers could write about real places. I mean, you don't want to say anything bad about a real place, do you?
Well, that is kind of tricky, but I figured in my case I'm writing about almost 200 years ago, so...
Nobody's still alive.
However, now, you know, as I said, my fourth great-grandfather was the leader, and so he's in the book. Joseph was a real live person, as well as his son Peter.
But those, and the real-life counterparts are no longer with us?
No, well, descendants are. I'm a descendant, and there
so
are
how, how,
others.
Right, how do his descendants think about you writing about them?
Well, the people that I've connected with are all delighted. But I really did know something about him. I found a letter in the Ohio Historical Society that a Quaker woman wrote in 1818 saying he was so domineering, they shouldn't have anything to do with him. And she says those people think he's another Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the records show that he kept the title to all 5,000 acres of their property in his own name until 3 days before his death.
Wow.
So he was a pretty domineering kind of person. So I could write that about him and feel comfortable that I was portraying him.
I guess it would be fun to write about domineering people, because you get to, and if they're villains, you get to make them real nasty, and if they're heroes, you get them, they can do everything, you know, they can... They're fearless, and they just, you know, they throw themselves out in front of a... I mean, Adelaide is... She puts herself in danger in this book, and it's, you're like, what is she going to do next? Is this woman even going to survive the book the way she's going?
Well, you'll have to finish it to find out.
Exactly. But, you know, and you think, when you're investigating a murder, you have to remember there's a murderer there, and the murderer is already killed once, so he has no compunction about killing a cat, he or she. I shouldn't
say
he.
That's right.
But,
well, certainly anyone who, any of the amateur sleuth kind of characters have to be a little larger than life, because you and I, or I wouldn't anyway, I wouldn't really investigate a murder.
Right. Now, when your publicist gave me this book, I didn't read it at first. I don't know why I looked at it. It looked interesting, and she cajoled me into reading it, and I was glad she did, because I really did enjoy it immensely. It's one of those books you start reading, and before you know it, you can't stop reading it. It's just, it's so interesting, the way it's written.
Wow, thank you so much. That's exactly what any writer would want to hear.
You know, and it's the kind of book you just can sit and enjoy on a weekend, you know, or at night when you're before bed. It's just, there's just so, and the characters, like I said, are very, very interesting. And, you know, they're not always likable, but if they were all likable, it wouldn't be any fun, would it?
That's right. They have, and who would they come up against if they were all likable?
Right. Have you always been a writer? I mean,
no, not really. I was a nurse, and then I became a university administrator, and I was a professor, so I had to write a lot for...
I mean, I don't know any nurse-turned-writers. I know a vet-turned-writer. James Rollins is a vet, and he turned into a writer. But, you don't hear about a lot of nurses that become writers.
Well, I think it was having to write professional work and then thinking, well, it might be fun to write a mystery. And so I did three earlier mysteries with a nurse character.
I love nurses. I've gotten tests in the past, recently actually. I love when a nurse can really just stick you in with a needle and not you don't even know they're doing it. And it's such an art for me. I mean, I know this sounds weird, but I mean, I have seen nurses that don't know what they're doing, and others that will just before you know it, it's already done. The blood's already been taken. It's amazing how some are better than others.
Well, part of that is practice too, and over time, you know, whatever you do. I'm sure your work in the bookstore is easier now than when you first started, and that's the same way with nurses.
Right, so I'm getting a rookie nurse, probably.
Maybe.
If they can't find a vein, you know, I hate when they're looking through your arm to find the vein, and then, I mean, you're already nervous, because who likes to get stuck with a needle? I mean, I don't know anybody who enjoys it. Although my cousin, believe it or not, my cousins used to fight over who was going to get the needle first.
Oh.
I can't even imagine that. I mean, never had to fight about it. I would let 5,000 people go before me. You know, I had no problem with that at all.
Well, maybe he or she wanted to just get it over with.
Well, I think that some day enjoyed it for some reason. Oh. I don't know why. It's kind of weird to think about, but I mean,
all the attention was on him.
So you're right. You're a nurse, and I guess you can't write while you're nursing.
Oh no, I'm a full-time writer now.
I mean, unless you're nursing somebody in a house or something, and you.
No. I'm not practicing as a nurse.
Oh, you're not practicing anymore.
No, but I'm still writing books for nurses.
You're still good enough to practice. You just don't.
I'm not so sure about that.
I think you're a good nurse. But I mean, now you're writing full-time. But what does that entail? How many hours a week?
Oh, I write every day, full time, every day, all day. Well, I work every day, all day, and it might be writing for my blog, which all the research I did, I'm doing blog posts about some of the things I found out that how people did things, medical care in the 19th century, crime and punishment back then, that was pretty gruesome. So I'm writing blog posts, or I'm active on some groups, and or I'm doing guest posts, or I'm doing radio interviews for podcasts.
There you go.
Like this, but then I write in the mornings for sure, and then when I just finished a textbook for Prentice Hall last month, and so I'm always working on something.
What How many textbooks have you written?
18. Something like that.
Is that work that's fulfilling?
Sort of, in a way. I like to feel like I might be influencing the future nurses. I felt kind of the same way when I taught nursing and when I was an administrator. I felt like I was making a larger contribution than just taking care of, say, one patient or one unit.
Right.
So I still feel that way a little bit. It's certainly a lot easier work than creating a mystery.
Right. Yeah, and there's a lot of work that goes into writing, and I think the more I read, the more I realize that, the more intricate. Now, I'm reading a fantastic book called Gone Girl right now, which has just totally gripped me from the moment I started opening the page, the first page. I'll probably never sleep tonight. I'll be reading this book for the rest of the night. It's just fantastic.
I've heard about that book.
Yeah, it's one of those books that's so well written and so, you know, captivating that it's hard to put down.
Well, that's what every author wants to do.
And you don't want it to end, though. That's the problem. And a book has to end at some point, obviously, or there wouldn't be... There has to be a beginning and an ending, or you wouldn't have a book.
Well, that's right. It would go on for 250,000 words.
Now, this Cover Her Body, this is going to be the first... This is the first one, but do you have a vision of how many there are going to be in the series, or does it all depend on sales?
No, I don't, and I think I can't look that far ahead. I've got this book. I have an idea for a third one.
Oh, have you already written the second one?
Well, I have a draft finished, but I'm rewriting now.
I wish I could see that one. I'd love to know more about these characters.
Well, I'll be happy to make sure you get a copy.
Right. It's interesting how, I mean, and I feel like I've invested already some time with these characters, and I want to know more about them. I hope you're going to go into depth and detail about you know, what these characters are really like. Let's get some behind the scenes kind of, you know, what they're thinking, what motivates them, and I like that.
Well, I am planning to do that. In fact, I think Kirkus did a review, and the only criticism they had was that they wanted more of the character's backstory.
That's exactly the way. Boy, I could write for Kirkus. That's exactly the way I felt.
You're good. So I'm putting in some short flashbacks. I'm always reluctant to put too much,
right?
Because it kind of bogs the story down. But in the next story, you'll learn what happened to Adelaide when her mother died and her father left, and how that happened. And you'll learn more about her sister and what happened to her sister.
Right.
And I think probably some more about Benjamin.
Why don't you tell people who haven't read the book a little bit about what the story's about? Just so we haven't really talked about the full story. We just mentioned a little bit at the beginning, but sure. Tell people what it's about.
Okay. Adelaide is a midwife. She's married to Benjamin and has a young baby. And one day she goes down to the river where she meditates and calms herself, and she finds the body of a dairy maid in the river and quickly jumps in and pulls the body out and realizes immediately that the girl didn't drown. But she can't convince anyone in her community that it wasn't just an accident. So no one else was worried. There was a murder in town, but she knew the girl was dead when she went into the water. And so she knew that somehow she had died ahead of time. And so she just keeps after it and tries to find out, and eventually she brings the outside authorities into their town to investigate. And of course, these people who had escaped from the authorities in Germany were very afraid when that happened. And in the end, she does track down the murderer, and she does find him,
but not without
endangering herself. And her husband is so worried that's going to happen, and also that they would be banished because it was hard living in the Ohio countryside.
That's one of the things in the book. There's this feeling that everybody is so afraid of what other people are going to think in this town. I mean,
there's that too. I think. You know, 300 people very close together to have little contact with the outside world.
You get into other people's business. It's a scary thing, I think. I mean, I wouldn't want to live in a town like that.
Oh, no. I wouldn't either. But, in fact, one woman, an elderly woman I met, said, she just talked about how idealistic it was. And they had this wonderful community, and they shared and shared alike, and I said, well, it seems to me there would have been some problems, and people would have gotten mad. And she said, yes. She said, my grandmother talked about all the people who were jealous and gossiping and so forth. So I think if you put a group of 300 people together, and you're going to have trouble.
I'm looking at the map here in the front, which is really—it's really cool. I mean, you get to see the whole town laid out for you. And it's interesting, the boys and the girls' dormitories are totally separate.
Of course.
They're on the other side of the road. Actually, I think they should be all the way across this. You don't want them too close, you know? You got those, you know, the boys and the girls together. That's not a good thing.
No, but I can tell you this. The map is historically accurate.
It is, huh?
The historian looked at it, and she told me I had to move the bridge. It was farther south.
Oh, really? Yeah, there's the bridge down in the canal.
Right, it's moved down.
So there really is a
County, Tuscarawas River. It still is Tuscarawas.
And how long, is it a long river? It looks like it is.
It's not much of a river now, but yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to find that
I just
out
figured you knew everything about your... Well, I think Agatha Christie used to put her character names in the front of the book. That's always a good idea, because sometimes you forget who's who and who's with who. And it's interesting, the book starts on May 3rd, 1833, because my birthday is May 3rd.
Oh, so, well, how about that?
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
So,
well, the reason I started at that date is they actually voted to incorporate the town on the date that's in the book. So I was trying to keep as much historical accuracy as I could. I worked back from that to see how we could lead up to the...
You like it. You seem to like historical stuff.
I've been a scientist.
I mean, you could write a book on, like, the Salem witch trials. I'd love to see a fiction book about the Salem witch trials. You could do that.
That's a little too creepy for me.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't think I could write that. I've never wanted to visit Salem for that reason.
I don't know why I say that. I just find that intriguing.
I think it's scary, and it shows you what happens, the group mentality.
And there's no trust. It's like nobody trusts anybody else in that kind of environment. I mean, everybody looks at everybody like they could be a witch, you know? And
yes.
What a terrible way to live your life. I mean...
Well, see, I think it was kind of sexist, too, because... It was mostly women. Oh, I mean, I think almost entirely women.
They didn't have any warlocks back then, did they?
I don't. They might have, but
they weren't bewitched. But they weren't. They weren't in Salem, I guess.
Well, everybody wants to figure out when bad things happen, why, and I think we still want to know that. And of course, back in that day, the germ theory hadn't been discovered. And so, why is it someone became ill and died? And why did the crops fail? And, you know, they just really didn't have the science behind it to know. And, you know, still today, we wonder why things happen.
No, speaking of science, my mouth is jumbling up here. Speaking of science, what was nursing like back in the 1830s? I mean, how was it? It was much different than it is today, obviously.
Well, there wasn't really nursing, per se, as we know it, because modern nursing was started by Florence Nightingale in the Crimean War, and that was, I think, 1848.
Oh, so it was too early for even Florence.
It was early, and so that's one of the reasons I couldn't put a nurse character exactly, you know, like I would want to, but I could put a midwife, and they were often... Or also treated people with herbs, and that was not uncommon, and I have some historical accounts of midwives who really did what Adelaide does.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what the time, I wonder how long people lived back in the 1830s as opposed to now. It must have been a very different, I mean, they got diseases back then, they didn't know what to do. They didn't have all these things they have today.
That's right, they didn't, and in fact, my ancestor, he brought his son with him when he came to America, but he left a 14-year-old daughter there. For what reason, we don't know. And we do have the records, and we show that she got married, and she died at age 42 in 1845.
Wow.
So that probably wasn't uncommon. And, of course, many women died in childbirth, which was totally preventable, but they didn't know about sanitation, and that's why they developed an infection and died, where they wouldn't have had to if only people would have washed their hands.
Why do you like to write so much? Obviously, this is your second series. You had the Monica Everhart series?
Everhart, mm-hmm.
Series. I have a feeling that you're going to tell me she was a strong character, too.
Yes.
There's a theme here, strong characters. I think you've got some strength there in you, too.
Well, yeah, I had some early tragedies in my life, and fortunately, that's long behind me, and I think that did it, yeah, uh-huh. And I think I was strong, I just didn't know it, and then, you know, when we're tested in life, we find out what we're made of.
Right, now, the Monica Everhart series, what kind of mysteries are they? I haven't even seen them, so I don't know much about them.
Well, they're contemporary, and they take place in St. Louis, which is where I live now. I wanted to make the first series as easy to write about those kind of things. And in fact, the third book, Harlequin bought a couple of them and put them out in mass market paperbacks. But then the third book is, I think in the next few days, is Assumed Dead is the name of that. It's going to be on Kindle.
Oh, how neat.
E-book.
How neat. So is that series going to continue too, or are you done with that series?
No,
Well, why does one stop a series? Why do you stop a series after three books?
Well, the publisher and I had a disagreement.
Oh, there's a whole other story about that. I can see.
Yes, indeed. And I wasn't the only one. And But anyway, I don't know. I just...
Did you want to continue the series?
No, I really didn't. Mostly because I wanted to write these. And I'm just so fascinated by these people's lives. I'm going to Germany this fall with a group from this town. And we're going to trace where these people lived in Germany, the little towns. And I'm going to be in the town where my ancestor was born on my birthday.
Wow.
And I just feel a connection to that. So I think it really wasn't so much I didn't want to write the Monica books. I just wanted to write these.
Well, it's interesting. Every writer's different. You know, some want to continue. I mean, Lee Child will be writing about Jack Reacher until the day I'm in the nursing home.
I hope he does.
But what fascinates me is that the writers can come up with these original ideas each time. I mean, you think about it. It's not an easy task. I mean, where do I start with the next book? Where I have to begin all over again. And the thing with your book, Your Singular Village, is there's not many murders in this town. So how are we going to have two or three other murders before it gets a little ridiculous? How do you do that?
Well, there's outsiders come into the town.
Oh, the outsiders will get the axe.
Well, we'll see.
Well, that's what we have to assume, I guess, because right. Nobody in the town is a murderer.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, we know. Yeah, I know what you're saying. There is
right.
a murderer.
We'll
in
have
the,
to see.
There okay. is a. A murder in the book, but overall, they're a pretty quiet, peaceful town.
Yes, I would think so. They worked hard, day and night. I mean,
well, when you look at churches nowadays, there's a lot of people that disagree in churches. I mean, you go to any, you join any church, and you see the disagreements. I mean, people don't always agree, so there's a lot of conflict there.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, nobody agrees on everything. I mean, my father would tell you this is the way it was, but you know, he would argue till he was blue in the face that it was exactly that way, and abortion is murder, and nobody's going to tell me any different. But you know, everybody doesn't believe that way.
That's absolutely right.
Right, and that causes a lot of conflict, as you might imagine. It's as bad as arguing about politics sometimes. You know, it's just
right.
You just have that conflict and. That makes for good stuff in the books. And the conflict in Cover Your Body is really what makes it fun to read a lot of times. You know, you see this conflict, you know, and she's being so obnoxiously driven to find out who what happened to this body, you know, what really happened. So
right.
That's what makes it interesting. And
well,
you know,
she felt like she had caused the death of a mother and a baby before.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing too. You
yeah,
know,
and you know, she didn't actually, but she thought she did because the mother and baby died, and so that makes her even more passionate.
They almost think she's a witch doctor. I mean, I get the feeling they almost think she's some kind of a voodoo kind of person. You know, what is she giving these people? Is she poisoning them and even doing it, not even knowing she's doing it?
Well, like I said, people want to make sense of when things happen. And you know, being a strong woman, no matter how much they said that men and women were equal, in that era, women were not considered equal.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, and how old is Adelaide at the beginning of this book anyway? I don't remember if you said an age.
I think she's 26.
26, so she's very, very young.
Except that was very mature for that era.
In fact,
girls were often married by 15 or 16. You know, if they were going to have children, you know, lives were short. So.
Boy, they really didn't waste any time, did they?
No, it seems strange to us today, but then our lifespan is so much longer, so.
Every time I think of a midwife, I think of that book Midwives by Chris Bajalian, which was so incredible that came out years ago. But I don't know if you've read it, but.
I do. I remember it, kind of vaguely.
But it was just fantastic, and coming from the point of view of a man, it's even more amazing.
That's right. He did. It was. You're right. It was a man who wrote that.
But it's a fantastic book. I wonder, with a midwife in the 1830s, how many babies would they deliver in the course of a year?
I think it would just. It's hard to. I'm trying to guess, but. My reference point is an actual diary written by a midwife in Massachusetts in the late 1700s to 1800s. And her notebook, her diary, was then taken by Laurel Archer Ulrich and made into a book called The Midwife's Tale, where she took sections of the diary and put it in context. She's a historian. And that's really what I used to know what a midwife did. But they would be called when a woman was in labor. Of course, there were two words that never said in that era, and one was pregnant and the other was labor.
Right, exactly. Now, how many people are in the singular village, you figure? Do you know exactly?
Oh, yeah, I do. About 300 people lived there then.
300?
Yeah, yeah. That's how many came over from Germany, or survived the trip and got there.
So, I mean, did it grow as the years went by? I mean, say in like 1853, how many people would have been in this town?
I think, no, it did not grow other than children being born. They had a lot of applications of people who wanted to have membership. If anyone came to the town, they had to serve 2 years of apprenticeship to membership.
Oh, wow.
And many people were turned down from even doing that. And they were coming from Germany. But these people were really stern. But there were, of course, children born. Well, now, there was a period of time, I don't know if you've gotten to it in the book, where they needed the women to help, and there were so many more women than men. And so my ancestor, presumably, mandated celibacy. And so even formerly married people had to go and live in homes with just the men and just the women.
Interesting.
And now you ask, how come I'm here? But because celibacy ended when they built the Ohio Canal through their land, and the money from that paid their mortgage, and that's when they allowed marriage again. So then, of course, children were born, people died, but I think they stayed around that number, and then they started to do it. He died in 1853, and he really didn't prepare a successor. And then the Civil War came along. These people were pacifists, but a lot of the young men wanted to fight for the Union. And so that just... And then more and more people came in from the outside. The railroad came through. And by 1898, they dissolved the company, or the corporation, divided the assets. But the town, of course, is still there. And there's about 300 people live there now.
Is that right? That's interesting.
And the buildings are still... The cabin my ancestor moved into when he came in 1817 is still standing and inhabited.
Now, do you know your full family history?
I do. I do. In fact, I know it back to the 1500s.
Maybe you should post that on your website so people can see.
Oh, what a good idea.
People would say, oh, now we get to see what her family was like, you know?
Right. How about that?
I think that would be a great idea. I think people would be interested.
Very much. Thank you so much.
if you don't mind talking about it. I mean, some people don't want to talk about their family. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had Uncle Bob was a real, you know, or something. You know, I have one family member who did some terrible things in our family, and I don't like to talk about it, but I almost feel like I have to just to get it out of my system. You know, you don't want to, your intent is not to malign them. You just want to be, you just need to talk about it, you know? Sometimes you need to talk about things.
Well, and you didn't do anything wrong.
No, but I feel bad for him. I feel bad for the whole, you know, the way the family was affected by it. And then everybody gets affected by these things, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what you forget. It's never just about you. When you do something, it can affect your whole family.
Oh, for sure.
So, are we really going to see your family history on your website?
I'm going to talk to my web designer about that. It's a great idea.
It is. We're going to see this mystery series, we might as well see what your family history is like. Maybe we can see some similarities somewhere.
Well, and I'm actually thinking about when I go to Germany that I might have a character take a trip to Germany in some other book. Mm. And discover something about her ancestor over there and how someone was murdered. I don't know. I'm having kind of fun playing with that idea.
Well, that's the fun. As a writer, you get to play with all these things in your head. And we don't know what's in your head. And sometimes that's a good thing, you know. Well, because you have all these ideas, and who knows what's going through your head, you know. You look at all these writers today, and you read some of the stuff they write, and you think, oh, my gosh, what in the world goes through their mind? Where do they think of all this stuff, you know?
Oh, there's lots of there's way too many ideas.
I mean, you only have to watch an episode of True Blood, and you're when you by the time you're done the show, you're like, Alan Ball has got to be a certifiable maniac. I mean, he's just got to be. I mean, these things are just some of them are just so twisted. You know, you just what is he really like? I mean, you can only imagine.
Well, the writer is not the character.
But, I mean, to think about all this stuff, to think of all these situations, and it's just, you know, it's got to come from somebody.
I guess.
I mean, there's nothing twisted in your book. This is pretty docile. I mean,
it is. Now, the Monica books, Monica has some flaws.
The more the better, you know, it turns out to be.
I've met a couple people who read them and said, wow. Eleanor, I didn't know you liked to hang out in bars and gamble. I said, well, I'm not. But
you don't really, but you like writing about it.
I do. It's a lot, you know.
Well, you get it all out of your system. If you don't like to drink, you can write about somebody who does, and that way you can do anything you want with them. It's like you're creating these people, and it's interesting. I mean, and what are they going to say, and what are they going to do next, and who are they going to antagonize, and who's going to have to get murdered?
Yep.
I mean, there's too many mysteries now I used to see this all the time on Murder, She Wrote, where there would be an antagonistic person in the beginning, and you knew they were going to get murdered. It was just a matter of time.
Oh, absolutely. That is the show you can just predict the outcome there.
Right, but the fun thing about that show is there was always a scene in the beginning that would give away who the murderer was. If you were watching carefully and you picked up on that little clue, by the end of the show, it would turn out to be the answer to the riddle.
Yeah, it was too easy.
But I hated those shows where you could just, I mean, they had their moments, but to know who's going to get murdered before they get murdered, that's not always fun.
No.
But nowadays they do it on TV all the time too. That you find the dead body and then you find out the whole backstory behind the person. But the problem with TV is they're such cardboard characters. They always talk about the same things. You know, what were they like and how you know? You don't get a sense of the character very much like you do in the books.
That's right. There's no depth to them, and that's part of the pleasure of reading is learning that.
I mean, you have an hour to talk about all these characters, and you know it's going to suffer because half the time it's going to be spent with the people investigating and their little foibles. You know, you're going to find out all, but you don't find out much about the victim, not enough to really feel like you know them.
And so you don't really care that much.
That's why Twin Peaks works so well. Over the course of the season, we got to see what all these things about Laura Palmer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then by the time that they did reveal who it was, you know, we had invested so much in the characters, we knew so much about the characters. That's why the table series works so well, because they take the characters and you find out everything you could possibly find out about the character.
And that makes it far more interesting.
I mean, you can do season after season of character development. You know, look what we found out about Dexter in 5 years. You know, it's just fantastic. Even though the show is very difficult to watch, you know, sometimes we do find out so much about him, and we feel like we know Dexter.
You know, that's true. I think of Nurse Jackie too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, she's got quite a bit of problems, that woman.
But you know, she gets nursing. That show gets nursing right.
Does it?
As most medical shows, just absolutely do not know what nurses do, but the nursing part of Nurse Jackie is right.
How about that? And sometimes on TV they don't get it right. I mean, a lot of people say the CSI stuff. I mean, they find fingerprints in 5 seconds, you know, and it really takes days and sometimes weeks to get them, you know. Everything's expediency for the show, you know. You got to make it seem real. So, but it to me, it's just the same things over and over. Sometimes it gets very repetitive.
I think they run out of stories.
So that's why it's so hard to write a book. I mean, your second mystery, I mean, I'm expecting a lot from it because I got a nice, a really good one from the first one. So I'm expecting a lot from the second one.
Well, I'll try to meet your expectations.
And we'll see.
We'll see.
But I mean, I think as a reader, you really, when you like a writer, you expect a good book every time. Now, is that too much to expect? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either, and I feel the same way. And occasionally, I've been disappointed by a book in the series.
I mean, I look at Ellis for Lawless by Sue Grafton. I absolutely hated the book, but you know, I love the way she writes. I mean, she missed it with that one, but every other one has been great.
That's right. So maybe they'll miss it with one, but. And of course, different people have different opinions, David.
But look how big, look how huge she is. I mean, millions and millions and millions of books later, I mean, people love her character. And her character is a very depressing person.
She is.
And she she lives with an 88-year-old man who, you know, can't live forever. So, but I mean, that's the trick, to find something that's interesting that people enjoy and that people will fall in love with, these characters. And that's what I want to know more about, your characters. I'm absolutely looking forward to book two.
Oh, thank you so much.
And do you have a title for it yet?
Graven Images.
Will that be the final title, or is that just a working title?
As far as I know.
Graven Images.
I think it will be.
Will it be about idols and idol worship?
Yes, in a way, but in a way you're not expecting.
Oh boy! Now you've really whetted our appetites. When are we going to see that?
I definitely next year, but I'm not sure. You know, I don't know the publication schedule.
I mean, what in your mind? What would be the best time to put it out?
Well, next spring would be a good time.
Because let's hope your publisher's listening.
Well, we'll see. Because with this first book, I went back to Zohar in Ohio, and they had a wonderful celebration for me, and came and so forth. And but I don't. It's northern Ohio, and I don't want to go in the wintertime. So.
Oh right, exactly.
So sometime between. Say April and October.
So it won't be a good for a Christmas gift because there's too much snow on the ground. You won't
there's
be able
too
to travel.
Much snow and getting there. So.
But people can still buy it, and at the end of the year, I'm sure it'll still be. But I mean, I've never heard of Yesteryear Press. It's new. It's new to me. So there's always new publishing companies, which is nice. Every time you turn around, and people can go on your website, www.eleanorsullivan.com, eleanorsullivan.com. So, and she's promised to have her family history up there at some point. So now you got something to look forward to.
Well, and I might blog about that. You know, I'm telling people about some of these things that went on in the 19th century in my blog. So
right,
I encourage people to check that out.
In some ways, as a writer, you have to become an open book. I mean, look at Lisa Scottolini. We know everything about her now from her columns in the paper. You know, her whole life is an open book.
I'm not quite so revealing.
You're not quite so revealing, but you will tell us about your family history. Well, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure too, David.
And the book again is called Cover Her Body. For some reason, I kept looking up Cover Her Face, that P.D. James book. I kept comparing it to that title, and I kept thinking, no, it's not face, it's body. Make sure you say body. And I'm so afraid I would say face instead of body. I don't know why you get these weird things in your head that just won't leave. But anyway, this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.